visit him a few weeks ago, and Layla herself, Professor Swaif, is in the 117th day of her hunger fast, and you've now joined her?
Yeah, that's right. She's a remarkably tough, resilient, extraordinary woman. But she is now entering the danger zone. The family have been monitoring her vital signs, and in particular her blood glucose levels. And it seems that in the last few days, they have dropped rather alarmingly. And we believe that she may well be approaching the danger zone. At 117 days into a hunger strike without any food, without any calories whatsoever, it's remarkable that she's lasted this long, but she is increasingly frail, and everyone is desperately worried for her health. But obviously, the whole point of this, as this hunger strike, as we heard from that clip from her earlier in your introduction, is to precipitate a crisis. She does not want to die. This is not a suicide mission from Layla. What she wants is to demand justice. She wants to really put Alaa's case at the top of the minds of the Egyptian and the British authorities and make sure that Alaa comes home. So
Peter Gresty,
determined. She's going to stick this out.
We have to leave it there. Peter Gresty, also on hunger strike, Australian journalist in solidarity with Alaa Abdel Fattah, will continue to bring you news of his imprisonment or perhaps his freedom. I'm Amy Goodman.
I'm Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
It seems like recently the struggle to take action on climate change has gotten more complicated. And there are a lot of solutions that are presented to us that at first glance look kind of good because they have the words green or renewable in them. But then when you dig into them more deeply, it turns out that not only are they a waste of precious time, but they actually are climate solutions that are worse for the climate. It's like chasing chimeras, a beast from Greek mythology, which sounds fabulous, but ends up to be a fanciful illusion.
Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions, a new documentary by veteran producer Barbara Bernstein, premieres on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m. Tune into Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or 91.9 FM Hood River, or anywhere in the world streaming online at kboo.fm. That's Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Multnomah County DA drops charges against a journalist involved in covering student pro-Palestine protests.
Portland police get a robot dog for defusing bombs.
And this year, Oregonians can file their tax returns for free through the IRS Direct File system.
No.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, January 24th, 2025. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Sam Bowman. The Multnomah County DA's office drops legal charges against local independent anti-fascist journalist Alyssa Azar. Azar was arrested in May 2024 while covering the student-led Palestine protests at Portland State University. She was initially charged with trespass 2, which carried a maximum sentence of 30 days in jail. While in custody after her arrest, she described facing extensive harassment from the Portland police, including officers taking selfies with her in handcuffs on their personal phones. Azar's arrest was immediately condemned by a number of press freedom organizations like the Committee to Protect Journalists, the Freedom of the Press Foundation, and the Society of Professional Journalists. They described her arrest as a, quote, troubling violation of Azar's clearly established constitutional right to document officials performing their duties in public, end quote. This summer, Azar was sentenced to 2 weeks in jail and 3 years probation for an arrest in Clackamas County, where the DA, Josh Coutinho, argued that Azar was not a journalist but rather an Antifa, quote, leader. Azar is one of only four journalists who has been jailed in the United States since the Press Freedom Tracker began operations in 2017. She was one of 48 journalists arrested in 2024, and, prior to the charges being dropped, was the only known journalist in the U.S. facing trial for her coverage of pro-Palestine protests. Azar became a reporter in 2020 while documenting the George Floyd protests on her social media accounts, which now have over 80,000 followers. The 33-year-old Syrian-American journalist has reported for outlets like Left Coast, Right Watch, and It's Going Down. She has been referenced as an independent journalist by outlets like the New York Times, Al Jazeera, and Columbia Journalism Review. Azar said in a statement to the National Writers Union, quote, "This experience has highlighted the critical importance of press freedom and the rights of journalists to report on public events without fear of arrest or intimidation. The need for transparency and accountability in our institutions grows increasingly urgent, and under a Trump presidency, protecting our First Amendment rights is more important than ever," end quote.
Two pro-Palestine activists in Eugene were found not guilty in their trial over protest charges. One of the defendants was Salem Younes, a first-generation Palestinian-American college student. The other was Lebanese-American human rights activist Kay Anton. Both face second-degree disorderly conduct charges for participating in a protest on the April 15th Global Day of Action. In Eugene, they were among the activists who briefly halted traffic on Interstate 5. These activists say their traffic stoppage was a direct response to the United States' role in supplying a majority of the weapons used by Israel in its military campaigns against Gaza and Lebanon. 62 people were arrested, and Younes and Anton are the first to win their jury trials.
Portland area police agencies have a new robotic dog on the force, intended to help with bomb defusing. It is a four-legged walking robot from Boston Dynamics, nicknamed Spot. It was unveiled at a press conference on Thursday. The robot is quite agile, able to climb difficult terrain, walk up and down stairs, pick up items, and open doors. It was purchased by the Port of Portland with a federal grant for $150,000. They expect to use Spot on the explosive disposal unit and in hostage situations. Portland Police Sergeant Jim Dufresne told KGW, quote, "If Spot falls down, Spot will get himself up. Driving these robots can be really complicated, especially in the dark and in the weather, and this robot takes away like 50% of that so you can really focus on what you're trying to do," end quote. Port of Portland Police Officer Charlie Berry said, quote, "It creeps me out just a little bit, but it's a really cool asset the more I've been around it," end quote.
Wisconsin voters will determine the future of a strict voter ID law. A federal judge pauses Trump's order to end birthright citizenship. And Democrats warn a disputed North Carolina Supreme Court race could set a chilling precedent. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I got people right in my neighborhood who can't get an ID, who can't vote. This is about voter suppression. Everything you do is about voter suppression.
Wisconsin Democratic State Representative Christine Sanecki says enshrining a strict voter ID law into the state constitution would perpetuate discrimination against her Milwaukee constituents. The state's GOP-led assembly voted to put the amendment before voters this spring. A federal judge in Seattle has placed a two-week pause on President Donald Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship, calling it blatantly unconstitutional. Angelica Salas with the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights says her Southern California community is still on edge.
What we need to ensure is that our community is not paralyzed by fear, that they understand that there are laws in this country, civil rights, constitutional rights, labor rights, that still protect us.
Meanwhile, the U.S. House has passed the Laken Riley Act. The bill allows ICE officers to detain undocumented immigrants for even suspicion of minor crimes. New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez warns people could be deported without getting their day in court.
That is what is inside this bill, a fundamental suspension of a core American value.
She notes some members of Congress with investments in private prisons are set to profit from the bill's passage. Senate Republicans are set to vote on the confirmation of Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth today. Alaska's Lisa Murkowski and Maine's Susan Collins say they'll vote no, citing allegations against Hegseth by his own family members of excessive drinking and serious abuse of women. Meanwhile, senior military officials are bracing for an executive order to create a so-called warrior board to determine whether they're loyal to Trump's agenda. Sarah Strader with the military families organization Secure Families Initiative says politicizing officers would erode the confidence of troops in the top brass.
Once that is gone, that will forever disrupt our military's ability to be the strongest fighting force in the world.
And the North Carolina Supreme Court has dismissed a suit by a candidate to that same court seeking to throw out 60,000 ballots. A lower court and the State Board of Elections had already turned away the challenge by the losing GOP candidate. Anderson Clayton, chair of the state Democratic Party, says going to court to overturn elections is not good for democracy.
What's happening in North Carolina is sinister. And it will have a chilling effect on our democracy and our country if they're able to get away with what they're trying to achieve.
Three recounts show the Democratic candidate won the race by more than 700 votes. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Starting next week, Oregonians will be able to file their taxes online for free using the IRS Direct File system. Just this year, the free system expanded to Oregon, meaning hundreds of thousands of Oregonians will be able to file their federal income taxes for free. It pairs with Oregon's free site, Direct File Oregon, to do state filings as well. There are a few types of returns that won't work just yet, those with itemized deductions and those who have business income. For years, tax software giant Intuit, the company behind TurboTax, has lobbied hard to keep the government from making its own free software. The idea was first floated in 2002. Filing people's taxes has been a profitable business, and Intuit has pushed hard on the Trump administration to pull the plug on the IRS Direct File system. It was piloted in a few states last year and got positive reviews for making the process simpler and easier to do. Oregon Senator Ron Wyden asked Treasury Secretary nominee Scott Bessent if the program would continue to be supported. Bessent said, quote, "I will commit that for this tax season, Direct File will be operative." Filers can find out if they're eligible online at directfile.irs.gov.
Eastern Oregon could use a good passenger train. That's according to a new report from the Federal Railroad Administration, recommending that long-distance passenger rail service return to Eastern Oregon. Amtrak discontinued its Pioneer Line 27 years ago, ending passenger rail. From 1977 until 1997, the route ran from Seattle to Denver through Portland, the Dells, Pendleton, LaGrande, Baker City, and Ontario. It also went through Boise, Idaho, and Salt Lake City. The report comes out just as Greyhound discontinued its long-distance coach-bus service in the same corridor between Boise and Pasco, Washington. The Greyhound cancellation ended long-distance public transportation in the region. The new Denver to Portland train route is not guaranteed to happen. In fact, the report is just one factor in potential decision-making. But its inclusion as a preferred route is described in the report as a, quote, crucial early step in a comprehensive process, end quote. It improves the chances of securing federal funding to start the next phase of analysis. The Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates organized a letter-writing campaign to show their support for the Pioneer Line. Even if funding is approved, service is more than a little way off. According to the report, it could take 15-plus years to advance from project planning to operations.
Research in Pennsylvania has shown that the salt used to melt winter's ice and snow on roadways, driveways, and sidewalks is altering the chemistry of groundwater, streams, and rivers. And that's having an effect on aquatic species, vegetation, and human health, according to the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. Research analyzing half a decade of data from rivers and streams across the U.S. has found a 37% increase in salt concentrations. Danielle Smith has more.
Just like overindulging in salt is bad for your health, so too is the excessive use of road salt on the environment. Since 2020, PennDOT reports applying nearly 600,000 tons of salt to icy roads. Harry Campbell with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation says research by the U.S. Geological Survey has found streams throughout the nation are getting saltier by almost 40%. Campbell says that salty runoff is harming freshwater aquatic creatures and points out that a single teaspoon of rock salt can pollute 5 gallons of fresh water.
And those freshwater critters and creatures like the brook trout or the eastern hellbender are actually having toxic effects from that salt that is now in the waters.
Campbell highlights Winter Salt Awareness Week, which starts January 27th as a national effort to educate people about the environmental impacts of using road salt and promote safer alternatives. He says it's a chance for Pennsylvanians to learn better techniques for de-icing roads, bridges, sidewalks, and parking lots. Campbell notes researchers are exploring eco-friendly options like beetroot juice, but they remain costly. He emphasizes proper salt use, applying the right amount at the right time in the right place could help minimize the impact on plants and animals. And he suggests homeowners opt for less harmful products like those made with magnesium chloride.
But magnesium chloride is less harmful for pets, has a less chance of actually affecting vegetation and ultimately polluting rivers and streams. But an even better choice is a product that is made of calcium magnesium acetate.
He explains these pet-safe products are not toxic like rock salt, which can also harm roadside vegetation. Salt pollution in waterways corrodes infrastructure, contaminates drinking water, and disrupts the natural balance of heavy metals and nutrients in waterways. I'm Danielle Smith, Keystone State News Connection.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be clear and cold, with an overnight low of 31 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny, with a high of 47. Today in history, in 2003, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security officially begins its operations. It is considered by some to be the most significant government reorganization since the Cold War. The quote of the day is from American author and the first woman to win a Pulitzer, Edith Wharton, born this day in 1862. She wrote, "Life is the only real counselor. That wisdom unfiltered through personal experience does not become a part of the moral tissue."
Anchorage, Alaska has a new small-scale casino, and it was built in less than a week. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Anchorage, Alaska area has its first small-scale casino. The Aklutna tribe began operations on Monday night in a building in Birchwood. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, it was constructed in less than a week.
The whirlwind effort to get the tribe's gaming hall up and running is in sharp contrast to the decades it spent fighting for the legal right to operate it. So why the hurry? Did the timing have anything to do with a new president? While Trump celebrated his inauguration, you could hear the steady roar of machinery at the tribe's casino. Construction equipment raced around a five-piece modular building, bolted together and propped up on wooden blocks. Even so, the Chenan Gaming Hall opened early that evening, and Dan Amadon was the very first to feed money into a gaming machine.
You put a little in, you get a little back. That's the fun of it.
Amadon operates a shop next door. And although this patch of land outside Anchorage still seems more like a construction zone, Aaron Leggett, president of the Native Village of Eklutna, called the first day of operations a historic milestone for the tribe. The building sits on a Native allotment that a year ago did not have the necessary Indian country status for gambling. But last year, the U.S. Interior Department changed its Alaska policies, and the tribe got final approval from Brian Newland, the outgoing Assistant Secretary of Interior, just 5 days before the Trump administration takeover. Don Mitchell, the lawyer for property owners who have sued the tribe, believes the scramble to open was to head off the governor of Alaska's request to Trump to block the casino.
And they somehow think that by opening up a symbolic casino, that that will improve their legal position.
The tribe says it's not so much fear of Trump, but fear of more delays caused by turnover in administrations. It says once it's in full operation, its small-scale casino will be an economic lifeline for its members. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Tribal leaders in the Southwest are addressing concerns from their tribal members as the Trump administration rolls out the president's immigration orders, which include deportation plans. The Navajo Nation, located in the Four Corners region, and the Mescalero Apache tribe in New Mexico say they've received concerns this week about circulating stories of tribal members being approached by U.S. immigration and custom enforcement agents in urban areas. The Navajo Nation Council on Thursday urged Navajo Nation President Boone Igren to take immediate actions on what it said are raids in Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah. The council says it's sparking fear. Nigren says as of Thursday night, there were no confirmed cases of detentions of Navajo citizens, but he's asking Navajo people to stay informed, remain calm, and carry a state-issued identification card. In a letter Thursday to Mescalero Apache members, the tribe stated it verified one incident where an ICE agent questioned a tribal member in a neighboring town. Mescalero Apache President Thora Walsh Padilla addressed concerns in a social media video message to tribal members, asking them to report any encounters.
We're very, very worried about our tribal members at this time, that such things like this could happen in this day and age, and we are doing everything we can. I mean, remember that we are the indigenous people of this area, and we are also a sovereign nation, and we do have rights.
The tribe's working with New Mexico's congressional delegation and has posted information on its website for tribal members about how to respond if confronted by U.S. immigration agents. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Portland Mayor Keith Wilson has officially put forth his plan to end unsheltered homelessness in Portland. He's calling for $28 million to be spent on emergency night shelters and emergency day shelters. That would equal 3,000 night shelter beds open before the end of the year. Wilson would also start enforcing the city's camping ban and stop giving 72 hours notice before a camp sweep, even though that is part of state law. Some officials have questioned the price tag. County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson said the figure seems low and accurate numbers are needed before they start on the path. Another Multnomah County official questioned why Wilson focuses so heavily on night shelters instead of 24/7 shelters that would keep people from having to move around so much. Wilson believes emergency night shelters will cost less money than 24-hour shelters. Wilson's plan also has a 90-day limit on how long folks can stay at a given overnight shelter. Portland City Councilors Angelita Murillo and Steve Novick were skeptical that was enough time, with Novick calling it, quote, unrealistic. Counselors said they also wanted to see an investment in housing, since that lack is the root cause of homelessness. Some of the funds he wants to allocate are already set aside for shelter beds, but not all of it. Currently, the homeless population in Multnomah County is near 6,000, with only 3,000 shelter beds available in the county each night.
The Lower Snake River dams are often criticized for their disastrous impact on salmon populations and native ecosystems. But that's not the only cost at play. As much as the dams purport to support irrigation in the region, they're losing a lot of water, too. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Dams on the Lower Snake River in Washington State are losing water to evaporation at a rapid rate, according to a new study. The reservoirs created by the four Lower Snake River dams lose more than 30,000 acre-feet of water each year. That's enough water for the household needs of 240,000 people, the Stockholm Environment Institute estimates. Miles Johnson with Columbia Riverkeeper says this is another drawback of the dams.
This study shows that there is a hidden cost to the existence of the Lower Snake River dams, and that's not to take away from any of the other well-understood costs of the Lower Snake River dams, which are the compromise of tribal treaty rights, competing salmon recovery.
The reservoirs from the dams have a surface area of about 30,000 acres in total. Columbia Riverkeeper and other organizations are calling for the dams to be removed to ensure the recovery of endangered species like salmon, which also impacts tribal nations. Critics say dams are often taken down without the input of nearby communities. Groups opposed to removing the dams point out that they're important for irrigating farmland in the region. However, Johnson says this hurdle can be overcome.
We can have those things alongside the services that the Lower Snake River dams currently provide if we plan carefully and invest wisely in replacing those services.
The study also found that the water that's lost to evaporation from the reservoirs each year could grow more than 8,000 acres of apples or generate $3.7 million in revenue for farms in southeast Washington. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegetoff.
Sometimes climate solutions can be hard to envision. One artist is painting a vision of a better world. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. 3 years ago, Nicole Kellner was working for a climate tech company and feeling burned out. To relax, she challenged herself to paint a watercolor each day for 100 days.
And they were just meant to be relaxing activities after work, but it turned into me painting about climate change solutions.
When she shared her paintings online, they went viral. And 4 months after picking up a paintbrush, Kellner quit her job to make climate art full-time. Many of her paintings help explain climate solutions. She's diagrammed how ground source heat pumps work, illustrated a poster of vegetarian protein sources, and painted sheep grazing under solar panels to show how agriculture and solar can coexist. But sometimes her images are more whimsical, like a painting of a wind turbine that says, "Renewable energy? I'm a big fan."
I want to make art that visualizes the world we want to live in.
And she's helping others do the same by teaching online workshops about using art as a tool for climate communication.
My art has reached millions of people personally. My goal with this course is to inspire other people to create art that could impact even more millions of people.
Like Climate Connections? Subscribe to our free daily podcast. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
And now we go to The Point Puzzle, the weekly radio brain teaser produced by Pearl Stark from KPOV Bend. This week's puzzle involved wordplay and fish.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to take two of the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and rearrange the letters to get a person who might be discriminated against and a word that connects people. Well, the answer is that you take Martin and King and you rearrange to get migrant and kin. It was a hard puzzle this week. We only had two correct answers. And our winner is Derek Reese, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
I cry power, 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 power.
For the new puzzle, send me two fish that are also verbs and can go in this sentence in the place of A and B. When people A, they sometimes B. So again, send me two fish that are also verbs and can go into this sentence. When people A, they sometimes B. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Down here all the fish is happy, as I feel my world's a roar. The fish on the land ain't happy, they sad cause they ain't their bowl. But fish in the bowl is lucky.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of January 20th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 24th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and Luna Winchester. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Danielle Smith, Pearl Stark, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on